Burn that rubber like I'm Michelin. Five star food that I dish to them. Chef sat on when I whip in the kitchen, and I switch suits like I'm Mr. Ben.
10-10 gear, I shift up to fifth. Blues in the rear and I'm swerving the mains like Tokyo Drift. Took a shot, but he missed. Then made love to the grin and kissed
the curb. What's the word? I dodge your case, so I flip the bird. Grab the bin, get back to work. Then I'm switching lanes and I flex out
hurt. I'll hurt him. One thing's for sure and two things for certain. When he gets made and the pecs, I'm serving him. Mess with a cake and I bet him a burger.
Welcome back to the What Will Fergie Do pod. I am Olu Jimmy, joined today by Mr. Francis.
Yo, yo.
And the man who loves to introduce himself.
Dr. Rahman himself, Neo, El Maestro to a lot of you, your favorite encarnator, Garantor. The guarantee is still strong as ever. Take it to the bank. Tell them I sent you. You're welcome.
Tell Tony Elumelu to come outside. Do you guys know who Tony Elumelu is?
Of course.
Like the Nigerian Tony Elumelu. Or is there a code name for some?
No. Because he's like, take it to the back and tell them I sent you. So that.
You know what's funny? Right. Tony Elumelu was at our wedding. Hey, Larry, do you remember seeing him?
Did you not just hear me say it?
Oh, what did he say?
I said Tony was at our boy's wedding now.
I didn't hear that either.
So
yeah, he was at the wedding. I made an appearance.
Yeah, he was.
Lagos big boy gets married, you know.
Headlines. Anyways, how's everyone's weekend been? Let's start with you, Maestro. How's your weekend?
Yeah, man, I was at the beach today.
Ooh.
It was good, man. It was actually like
guns out, bombs out.
Did you get some spice?
What kind of spice, like June?
Yeah, that's what. Look at you.
What are you talking about? Ice spice.
Look at you. What about you, Francis? How was your weekend?
A weekend was great. I didn't do much. Actually, we went to see the movie Dune.
Yeah, we did.
Which was probably one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. But I think it's been a decent weekend. The weather's good. It's what, 16, 17 degrees.
Wow. Yeah.
Guns out, bombs out, thighs. A lot of thighs.
There's a lot of coochie cutters out there.
A lot of the thick thighs.
But yeah, I think for me, like, besides like Dune, I think the highlight is just that the fact that the weather has been nice. Like, it just puts you in a good mood. Even if you're not doing anything, like, you know, extra.
Yeah, 17, 18, wow.
Yeah, you know. The rooftop was down this weekend for sure.
Wow.
Like, when I was driving. So, like, it's been a nice, chill weekend. Although now, when you think about it, today is already Sunday, tomorrow is Monday. Kind of dampens your spirit. But yeah, Dune 2. Now we can finally talk about Dune 2 as a group.
What did you guys think? I already expressed a few thoughts last week. So.
Yeah, I can go first. I think, again, this guy is 2 for 2 in terms of the visual, like a visual spectacle. Like, it's been a while since, again, like I think I said this about the first one, that you go to a movie and that you're just fixated on every single shot, every single screen, because you don't know what you might miss. But I think, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think, like you, I'm going to actually go watch it again next weekend, because I feel like there are some things some dialogue that I need to, like, relieve, if that makes sense. But I think, he knocked it out of the park, like 11 out of 10, if that's possible. Francis, what are your thoughts?
No, it was a good movie. And I love the, even though the first one was 2-3 years away, you could still tell, see like the huge connection between part one and part two. And again, that's supposed to be the goal. But some movies, they just lose themselves in transitioning from one part to another part. This could easily be like a dialogue or a trilogy or whatever you want to call it into next 3-4 parts, right? I think, yes, the director has set the movie in a very good position where you can just keep continuing it and the storyline will probably not ever get stale. But I mean, you never really
know. I don't think it'll be the same if it's not his director. I know right now he signed up for three, so there's going to be a trilogy. Like, he's going to direct three.
I'm not seeing a different director of the book,
right? So the book already exists. So the story already exists.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, I don't think it will be the same. Like, I think it's just the perfect marriage of the director and, like, the storyline, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah, but I'm not asking for the director to change, though. He has just set the movie itself in a position where, you know, you can make more parts, right? And it will just keep flowing. I don't know the details in the book, but it sounds like maybe there's more content in the book that has not been released in the movie. So there's probably opportunity to make additional parts there.
Book one. The first two movies are book one.
Oh, how many books are there?
They're like six books.
I think six books. Yeah.
So the first book. So if you see the first Dune, the original Dune that was made, they actually just made one movie for book one. So instead of two parts, they did it as one. So it jumps a lot more. It's not as comprehensive as this one is. But without doing any spoilers, I think one of the things that I enjoyed, obviously there's the visual part, but the story, man. The way the story builds and like the speed, like sometimes, I'll give you an example. Have you guys seen this Netflix movie called Rebel Moon? Have you seen this movie?
Oh, that movie is so trash.
Zack Snyder. Watched
it. No, I feel like Zack has lost it, man. He never had it. Like from the Batman fiasco. Batman versus Superman fiasco. Don't know, whatever that thing is.
That was where I clocked that this guy was a fraud, because I remember somebody telling me that no, you don't get this movie, but that Snyder Cut is coming out in theater.
That was equally as trash.
You will get it. That all the things that he had to take out because the studio. And I saw the Snyder Cut. Thank God I had the foresight not to go and watch it in theaters. It was like,
Yeah, it was like, you know what's funny? I think we saw it together. Me, Francis, and Kenneth saw this Snyder Cut together. Francis, remember? That we fell asleep, I fell asleep like in the middle of it.
The Batman movie.
Yeah. Can we watch that at your old apartment?
Oh yeah. That movie was beyond trash. Like, you know what? I remember vividly in the movie was when there was an incident and all the superheroes were flying and Batman went to enter his car. I'm like, you are actually useless. See, there's traffic now, you can't get where you're going.
Well, coming back to Rebel Moon, right? I watched Rebel Moon around the time I went to kind of rewatch Dune. And even though they are sci-fi movies in name, they are nothing alike in terms of...
Nothing alike. Rebel
characters, the way they try to introduce the characters. Because storyline, they are not similar, but they kind of have like some similarities, right?
Like the Messiah piece, complex piece.
But it's just like you're creating a world. And there's an emperor, there's an antagonist, all these kind of things. So I think the thing I really liked about the second part was just the attention to detail and the pace. Like, the first one was, okay, let's introduce you to the world. Things are happening, but it was relatively even pace. This one, from the beginning, it feels like you're building to the end. And even though there are new characters, like, what's his name? Fizz and Raw, whatever the new guy be, the Harkening guy, the Harkening guy that he ends up fighting.
Oh, like the Baron's cousin?
Yes, exactly.
Or Baron's nephew, guy. Sorry, the Baron's nephew or cousin, one of those two, yeah. I think they called him like Du Baron or something like that, one of those names. Like there's like a Du Ifrin and Baron or something in the name. Yeah.
That's like the title for him being the next Baron. His name itself, I've forgotten his name. But yeah, anyway,
his name.
Introducing that guy, even like the way that the characters switch, the way the Monsi switches, the way he switches, by the time he gets to the point where he's in that gathering, and again, I don't want to give you a spoiler.
Spoiler alert, I think we can talk about this comfortably. Like, spoiler alert for anyone who's listening who hasn't watched Dune. Please skip past this.
There's a lot of people that haven't seen it.
I know, that's why I'm like, you're going to tell them and then so that they can skip past it if they want to. Because I feel like we need to talk about this movie and the acting, though. That's my point.
Yeah, no, but we can talk about some of it without giving away the actual...
The plot points, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Let's see how successful we are, but you've been warned, Chad. You've been warned, Chad.
Yeah, I think like I think we should just take a moment and just talk about like, or just marvel about Timothée Chalamet in this movie, and his heel turn. Like you said, like going into that like gathering, like the way everything just switched, and it just went from like the guy who's trying to help like the, what are they called? The Furmans. And then he just turned to, and he told the woman, shut up. and he just started like prophesying, like, you know, like this false prophet, like kind of like narrative and things like that. Yeah. Like, no. Like, I feel like he killed almost every scene in this movie. I kind of, even his walk up like the hill or the mountains, like when you can see the difference in the way he was walking when he actually realizes like the kind of power he has and when he was trying to hide away from the power. Like everything just changed, and I think like it's one of his best. I don't know. Yeah, like I think this might be
the Stilgard.
Oh, I like Stilgard. I feel like he acted well, and that's the guy from Old Country for No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, it's another heap.
Yeah, I don't know if he was meant to be funny, but like I feel like I found him like the comic relief of this movie.
Anything that you just be holding your breath, it just happens. Like I'll just be like, that's why he's still a seller like him.
I know. My guy was, he's like, yo, that's my king, that's my goat. I feel like he killed it. Like,
yeah. Amazing. The next book is a little different from this one, so I don't know if they will make it. I don't know what direction they'll go. And it's not so, like in the book, for example, what's her name? Annie doesn't really disagree as much as like
the movie. Even in the first movie, like she was on board with everything in the first movie too that they created, like they had like a while ago.
Yeah, and that's how it is in the book. But I can see how they might want to make changes because the next one kind of jumps into the future. It doesn't just continue, right? It starts like a little further down. There's certain other differences. Like in the book, the daughter is actually alive. But again,
they kind of foretold what will happen anyways in this movie.
Yeah, so there's still some differences. So but like, yeah.
I think obviously we all agree that like Paul is like the false messiah. I feel like the one is the sister in the womb.
Not really. Like again,
not even talking about from the book. I think from the way this movie is going, like I feel like the real one with like the proper powers is, even though
it won't be, just because there's a reason why. So, and again, without getting into too much spoilers, because I guess this one, they don't talk about it in the movie itself. But the reason why it had to be a man is because the women, so like the Reverend Mothers, when they take that water, they get access to all the Reverend Mothers that have been
before.
They only get access to the female memories. They don't get access to the male memories. So this guy, the Kwesas Hazara, you know, he's the only one that can get access to both. Like, you get access to the male memories and the female memories.
And the female.
And you can see further back and see into the future. The sister also gets some of those abilities, but not as much.
Not as much as...
going forward for, you know, for the kids. But again, that's a different story. That's further into the future.
But I guess we can wrap this up by asking, like, what would be your best scene, like, in this second movie? What do you think, like, the Larry?
Man, I don't know. It would probably be the one where he goes into the gathering, the meeting, the final meeting, even that one is kind of mad. It would be one of those two, but the one where he goes into the meeting of the friend.
When he finally realizes, like, what he has to, what to do, and said, you know, she will have to forgive me, or she will understand. When he goes into that gathering, that's the one you're talking about, right?
That's the final one. That's the one with the emperor and the...
No. Remember, like, when he woke up and she slapped him and she left him.
Oh, yeah. So that one.
Yeah.
But the final one, too, is like...
You're right. When he walked in and he was trying to kill the Baron and everyone just stood there watching him, like, that's kind of like presence.
Yeah. There's no music in that film. In that whole part, there's no background music. Like, the second time I watched it is when I realized it. So the fight,
all that
stuff, it's quiet. Yeah, there's no
music. I need to watch it again for sure.
And the music kind of stops. Like, when they get into the chamber where everybody is, the music stops. When he says, like, hello, grandfather, da da da, then, you know. Anyway, great movie.
Francis, what was your favorite part, Francis?
My favorite sci-fi movies of all time.
Yeah, I think it's up there too for me. Francis, what's your favorite scene of the part two?
Jimmy, what was yours?
Mine was, I think, but now that you reminded me of the end of the scene at the end, I think they're neck and neck. But I think, I'll still pick the one where it goes into the gathering and it started, like, prophesizing, you know, or when that guy kind of, like, acted like he was going to challenge him and he just started telling him about his mother, about how she got, like, hit with the rock when she was 12 or 11. And as soon as he said that guy just bowed down and just like,
listen, I got you.
Exactly. But also, I think, the second one will probably be, like, the end where after, like, the Baron, you know, when the Emperor, like, cuts, when they cut, like, the lifeline from the Baron.
Let's try to limit it.
Yeah, but anyways, when he was walking up the stairs and no one actually said a word, no one challenged him, he just basically walked to his granddad and just said, hi, granddad, and just, like, sticks the knife, you know, on his neck.
Everything. It doesn't matter, like, Sadaka just there at the end, even tell them, like, take them as prisoners, kill the
side. I know, and just feed him to the desert, like, I know. At that point in time, he had command of the Furmans, like, they would, if he told them to hang themselves, they would hang themselves that day. But anyways, that's neither here or there. Let's get to why we have this podcast. There was a FA Cup semi-final game between Manchester United and Liverpool. Typically, Liverpool gets the upper hand in this kind of games, but we won the game 4-3. The game went into extra time, so we played extra 30 minutes, I think, after the 90 minutes. And I think that kind of, like, played into, like, our side, because Liverpool had a game on Thursday and you could tell, like, they were knackered at the end of... Well, to be fair, we were knackered too. Like, I think at the end, like, even Bruno couldn't... I don't know, he felt like he was injured or something. But I would say, like, one of the most impressive things I've seen so far in the last couple of weeks or even this year from United is that the way we played in the first half, like, from a tactical standpoint, I think we got a spot on. Like,
considered the two late goals,
yes,
right?
That's what I mean. But we can get into how we considered the two goals and everything like that. But I feel like up until we considered like the first goal from Liverpool, I think we were spot on. Like, we did to Liverpool what Liverpool did to Man City in the last game, is what I felt like in that game. Like, we were high pressing, we overloaded the ball side. And what I mean by that, like, in the sense that, like, there's actually this tactic in FIFA where you can actually overload the ball side. So basically everyone goes towards the ball side, so you make the pitch as compact as possible. So if they want to actually do something, they have to switch sides. So I don't know why we never actually tried that before, but like, that was one of the most impressive 15 to 20 minutes I've seen United play in a while. But anyways, that's neither here or there. I think there are still some issues in the way we consider the goals. And I think we're so quick to looking for fouls instead of actually playing through. And one of the things you notice was the fact that we have nobody who could actually hold the ball, like, from the back. Wan-Bissaka was like hot potato number one. Everybody was in the back, was just like, every time we had to play out of the back, you were like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? But anyways, the end of the day, we won the game 4-3. I think it was a compelling game, back and forth in the second half. But I think one of the things that done Liverpool in was the fact that they had a game on Thursday. But Omaisha, what are your thoughts on the game?
Conflicted. I think, again, if I just take this game for its own merit, so not like looking at the grand scheme of things or our form or anything like that, I'll say, you know, 120 minutes, resilient. We went behind. We went ahead the first time, then went behind twice and had to come back twice. And you know, both times it was late, right? Like, Anthony comes back. And again, we had unlikely heroes in those moments. Like, you think about Anthony coming on and having an impact, you think of Ahmad coming on and scoring a goal and getting a red card, you know. I almost said spoiler alert, but yeah, at this point, if you are listening to this,
wait, I didn't watch the end of the game. Like, how did he get a red card?
Red card, what did he do?
Two yellows, so he got a yellow card, and then when he
celebrated,
took his shirt off. Jesus.
Did he forget or what?
It was in the heat of the moment, though. Like, I can understand why someone would forget that they already have a yellow.
I don't know if you guys have seen the goals.
Yeah, I've watched the goals. I've seen the highlights.
So, you know, I think, again, at the very end, we kind of scored the last goal from a Liverpool corner kick where Elliot dallies a little bit on the ball. Ahmad pounces. Ahmad and Garnacho.
Yeah.
You know, there's something about Garnacho. I like his energy, but I don't always trust his decision making. You know, like, when I see him with the ball, I always wish, like, okay, is there, like, I know you're going to run, you're trying to beat this person, maybe crossing. He gets the ball a lot and he's having to make these decisions.
Yeah. And
I find myself,
I think it's his decision making. And he's not, his decision making is a little bit too immature.
Let's keep in mind, he's still young. He hasn't played, he hasn't had that many reps.
He started, and that's where I was going to. That's where I was going to with the immaturity.
Yeah.
But it's like he rushes his decision. And it's like, and the sad part is, the alternate decision he could have made is probably even way better than what he did. Like, way better. He's in positions where he could maybe just pass the ball or lay it off. And I'm like, why do you have to shoot from there?
But isn't that the same thing? Sorry, and I'll let you continue. Like, isn't that the same thing we say about Rashford? So shooting that boy down to, like, the coaching in the back end? Because if you could say the same thing about our two wingers, that, like, their decision-making hasn't really improved with the amount of games that they've gotten.
Go ahead, Larry.
You finish your thoughts first. I'll go after.
Now, I think with Garnacho, there's a little bit more leeway for him. He's 19 or whatever it is, right? But my hope is that this is something they can catch now, as opposed to playing thousands of games, like getting mileage in the field and then still keep making the same mistakes over and over again. If he continues to do that, I think he'd end up being like Rashford, who's very inconsistent, because we are beginning to see some of that with Garnacho now. And I think it's those learnings that we want Garnacho to change in his game at this very early stage, as opposed to being in position like Rashford, I don't think he'll ever change. I think Rashford is going to be the same guy that will get the ball, come to a full stop, or try to beat a man and not, you know, do anything with it. I think that's the guy now. But the chances that Garnacho creates by himself and even gets into is, I don't think it's something we see in the team. So I don't know if I would put both of them in the same bracket.
Well, so for me, first of all, they're asked to do different things, right? Garnacho is a righty playing on the right. So he's not able to shoot as much as like when he plays on the left because he can cut in.
Yeah.
So he's on the right, he's almost always going to go down the line and put a cross in, right? So there's a little bit of a difference in what they have to do. But to go back to what Jimmy was alluding to me, this comes down to coaching. Because there's sometimes, okay, so there was a pass today that Rashford made, or a couple of passes he made. There was one, actually, both of them were to Scott McTominay. There's one where he's on the wing and he puts a cross in, but it's like Scott runs onto it, slides.
I saw that one.
Just kind of goes, yeah. There's another one where he gets to the byline and he cuts it back for Scott. And Scott takes a shot, but kind of shoots it directly at the keeper.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one too.
To me, those are like two examples of like situations where you are not explicitly communicating, but you have an idea of where this person is going to be. And I when I look at our wingers, that's the thing that I always come back to is, remember like when we were conceding those goals early on in the season against Bayern Munich, against Brighton, against City, against Arsenal, the cutback.
Yeah.
That cutback pass was never a mistake. Like you look at when we considered against Brighton, when we considered.
I see what you mean. Yeah, that's something that they've talked about in training and they knew that was going to be there.
With us, I never know where our players are going to be. And it feels like our wingers also never know. So it always feels like we are just crossing blindly across to the spot where I think you should be attacking. Right? Like, it never feels like, oh, the plan is. The only person I get that feeling with sometimes is Scott McTominay.
Don't get me started on Scott. Like, although we won the game and he scored a goal, but Scott, my goodness. God bless that guy.
In attacking positions, I feel like Scott always plays, like when Scott and Hoyland play together, you get to see the benefit because you get to see that Hoyland will take one or two defenders.
Yeah. I'll give him that much. Yeah.
Always there for the rebound. Or they always leave him and he finds a way to score. Like a lot of his goals are goals that are in the same position where Hoyland would regularly. Even today, the goal was like a ricochet. Like you see Hoyland take the defender and then Scott is there to do the mop up. Right? So, but it never feels like our wingers know that, okay, dribble, when you dribble, like if I'm Rashford, am I cutting down the byline and trying to cross? So if I'm me, if I'm Bruno, if I'm McTominay, if I'm Hoyland, I don't feel like there's the instruction of, if you see Rashford run down the byline, this is where you need to be. So that when we're training, I am putting the pass to you in the same spot 10 out of 10 times. Because the defenders can't know where you are going to go faster than you. Are part of what your instinct is okay, we're communicating somehow. And that's the thing that I realized with Garnacho today, is that when he beats a man and goes and tries to put the cross in, it's just arbitrary. Sometimes it will go into the middle of the box. Sometimes it will go into the byline. There was a cross that he put in right after Hoyland came out. And I remember thinking to myself, man, Hoyland has been begging for that cross all day. Soon as he leaves, the first cross you put in is into that area where he can actually do something. So that's the thing, again, that I keep coming back to, is like, Garnacho is going to be inconsistent because he's young. But I just wish that I could see the evidence that he had the instruction that when you're in this position, this is the area you need to target. right? These are the areas, like this is the first level, this is the second level. Put it into one of these two areas so that in a game, I'm not seeing 10 crosses that go to 10 different positions just based on his body shape when he crosses the ball. You know, I don't know. It doesn't feel like there's any cohesion in the coaching in terms of what we're supposed to be doing in those positions.
I know we're so quick to, well, I wouldn't say we're so quick. We give ETH a lot of flack, but Francis, did you think he got the tactics right today?
To be fair, I didn't watch the game like in its totality, so I can't really comment on that. I was watching in bits and pieces, so I don't really know what tactics he used or if he made anything, if he changed the game plan in any way. I just noticed Wan-Bissaka was playing on the left. McTominay was playing his normal position. So if there's anything he did that was different, yeah, you guys can let me know because I'm not sure.
Well, like I think I already talked about, I think he got his spot on in the first 15 minutes on before we considered the goal. I talked about overloading the ball side and talked about like the high press, something. And I think just the overall energy from the team in those like first 15 minutes is something that we haven't seen in like in a long time. I know we've come here on, you know, pod after pod talking about how come like we never show like intensity, or how come like we always put our head down when they score us, which again you could say that was true after they scored their two goals, but I think there was just something about the mentality that was just different. I don't know if it's because it was FA Cup. I don't know what changed today, but I feel like there was something different about the team today. And that's one of the reasons why Liverpool couldn't just, you know, because Liverpool were on top like for most of the game, but they couldn't just put us away for some reason. They had chances, but like they couldn't put us away. So I don't know what the difference is, but I just know from a tactical standpoint, I think I enjoyed everything I saw from the first 15 minutes of this game. And that's the kind of thing I'm looking for, because I could tell that they knew what they wanted to do.
15 minutes is not 90 minutes,
though. No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like,
we had good 15 minutes. Against Man City, we had a very good first 15 minutes. In Champions
League, today's zone was different, though. Like, there was, I don't know, maybe because I had zero expectations.
In Champions League, against Galatasaray, against Bayern Munich, against, what's the other team? Copenhagen. In all of those games, if you remember Champions League, we were winning 3-1 or 3-0 in the first half of one of the games. Like, in fact, in almost all the games, we're leading. The Bayern Munich game, we were playing well until we weren't. Right? So, I don't know. It's hard for me to take positives from the 15-minute spell. It's not 15 minutes. It's like, so we scored the first goal. Liverpool comes back into the game a little bit. We concede at the stroke of halftime, 45 minutes, and we concede two goals in after 45 minutes. The first one is like 45 minutes, second one is like 46 or 47 minutes, after like playing well for the entire first half. And we concede these goals from nothing. Like you said, the press, like all of a sudden at the end of the half, they are pressing, you give the ball to Wan-Bissaka. He does this stupid thing where he's dallying, he turns around, just bluff the ball if you're not comfortable. And again, like I've said this before, when we play out of the back, we look like we don't know what the fuck we're doing. We look like we're just making it up as we go along. He gives the ball to Bruno. I thought that was a foul, right? To me, that's a foul.
Yeah.
Is it like stone cold? It's a foul. Like, that is always called. The ref decides not to call it today. A few passes, next thing it's a goal. Okay. The next one, a few seconds later, a few minutes later, we concede again. And second half, beginning of the second half, we are just at sea. Like, Liverpool is just controlling the game. They are not dominating in terms of creating a huge amount of chances, but they are just keeping the ball. We are running around. You can see the frustration beginning to set in, you know. And for most of that second half, it was just like a non-affair. When I say non-affair, there were moments happening, but it just felt like, okay, Liverpool is going to control the game. United is going to try to win the ball. and hit on the counter. And all those like moments, like the press that you saw in the first half, that went away. The small control, the cutting edge. And then he made a few substitutions. He took off Hoyland. He brought on, I think, Maguire and Anthony. Yeah, he brought on Maguire and Anthony. I don't know if he made some of the other changes right away, but he made the changes in bits and pieces. And I thought Anthony had a good game today for the time that he played, like when he came on. Again, I wouldn't see, he had more assertiveness today, even if it wasn't cutting edge. You know, even the goal aside, I thought he was more assertive, more involved in the play in a way that was impactful, or at least contributed. You know, even the goal in Bolaiza, before he scores, he's the one who starts the attack. Like, he's the one that gets the ball, passes the ball out to Garnacho. Garnacho gets in, crosses it. I forget how it ends up with Anthony. He turns around, he shoots, he scores, right? And then he had other good moments as well. So I thought some of the substitutes that ETH made ultimately helped him. Like, obviously, Ahmad coming in, Ahmad scoring. I also liked Ahmad's energy as well. Like, I don't know why Ahmad doesn't play more, to be honest. It feels like, again, I'm not saying we should bench Garnacho, but Garnacho has started 20-something games in a row for us. Like 21 or 22 games in a row. Maybe a little bit more than that. Is there no chance for some of these other guys to get in? And maybe Garnacho is not one you need to be benching. But when you are making subs, I guess today Anthony came in, Ahmad came in, Mason Mount came in, he brought on Harry Maguire. So you can't give all this thing about your injuries anymore. Mbasaka is back. Harry is back. Mount is back. Ahmad is there. Anthony is there. So we should be seeing a little bit more. So, yeah, I don't know. I thought we can look at the result and we can see, yes, he got the result today and he needed a result today. You know, but I don't want to be too crazy about the result, because again, we scored late in the game through Anthony. In the beginning of second of extra time, we concede a goal from nothing again, and then we need two late goals to win the game. So, you know, kudos to the team, but I'm keeping my eye out for the next match to see if we carry over the performance, or if we just revert to our useless selves.
Francis, what do you think our chances are in this cup?
Who are we playing? We're playing Coventry next, right?
Yes, Coventry we're playing next. And yeah, then I mean, we'll play the winner of City and Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, our chances are fairly good, but you never really know what you're getting with this team, right? Even when you can clearly see what they're giving you, you still don't know what it is. So it's like, in comparison with the other teams, I think City have Chelsea, Chelsea have City. Our chances are a bit higher than the rest of them. So I feel we can make it to the final, but regardless of who we face in the final, I think the final is where it stops for us, but again, I don't know.
Even if we manage to get Chelsea hasn't really shown anything this season too.
But has Man U showed anything? both teams are just in a state of chaos and disarray, so you don't really know what they are going to get. And I think Man U has a very good style of even confusing the opponent. When, like, we play so much rubbish that the opponents seem confused and they don't even know what to do anymore. You know, just using the game today as an example, in bits where I watch, it's like both teams are just playing absolute garbage, right? So, I don't know. It'll be a tough game against Coventry, because I've seen that they beat Wolves a couple days ago, yesterday or so. So, I don't think it'd be a walk in the park for sure.
Oh, Maestro, what do you think our chances are in the cup?
I think we're favorite in the cup right now.
Wait, did you say we're favorites?
Yeah, I think we're the favorites. I expect us to win at this point.
Like to win the next round, the quarterfinals, not the.
I think that the favorite left in the competition.
Oh, to win the whole thing?
The whole thing, yes.
Yeah.
Djibouti is not, she's not sure what you're seeing.
I'm like. Because that's, I'm guessing he's quoting it from somewhere. Or maybe, well, are these just your thoughts or you saw it somewhere that were the favorites?
No, these are my thoughts. I'm telling you.
Okay. No, that makes more sense. It's not
based on like book.
I thought maybe you saw it. I'm like, who are these people like giving these favorites? Like, never mind. Continue.
my sugar. If you remember, I was the only one that picked us to win against Liverpool today.
That's true. You were the only one. Did you actually pick us to win or you picked us to draw? I can't even remember.
Yo, speaking of what people picked, who said United was going to win when we came, when we were 2-1 down in the group chat?
You did.
I did.
If you don't bring over this people, if you don't give your prediction at the time of your watch before you do prediction. Every other prediction we don't count. I did not see this thing that you're talking about. And to be honest with you, you didn't watch the game. So how can you be giving predictions? Your prediction is void.
I said I watched the game in bits. That's what I said.
In bits. And okay, so when were we 2-1 down? So you gave it at the beginning of the second half.
No, I gave it and immediately they scored the second goal, which was in the first half.
What did you say?
I said United will win this game. Nigga, why are you acting like you didn't read my message? You read my message. I'll paste it. I'll do you a favor. I'ma do you one. I'ma do you a solid, my nigga.
Nah, again, like I said, we have you on record as saying that United was going to lose. What did you call? You said 4-1, right?
Yeah.
Was it not 4-1?
To who?
To Liverpool. You said we're going to lose 4-1 in this game.
Bro, we didn't even get the chance to give our this thing.
No, we did. We did.
Record now. We didn't record on Friday.
No, but we talked about it in the last one, Sunday pod.
No, that was on against the.
No, we played City. We played.
Don't worry, I'll cut that for them.
Yeah. Please do. Yeah, guys, it's been
because what
from a previous episode of What Would Fergie Do?
Yeah, like I said, I my prediction is going to be like the same result as the City game. I'll go 3-1 to United to Liverpool, but yeah, I don't see any circumstances in which ETH all of a sudden like has this tactical advantage over Klopp. Even if we're home, I don't see that happening. So it's sad, but it's just the reality of United right now. Francis, what do you think your scoreline would be?
Three-one to Liverpool.
El Maestro.
I'm going to go 2-1 United.
I love how you always zag. Did last Sunday was we talked about this game. Like we didn't, that's why we didn't have a recording on Friday, right? Because we talked about this game already.
Yeah.
When I said I was the only one that predicted who would win, where did you predict it?
Yeah, I can't remember, and I'm not really the one to point fingers where, you know. So if you guys have, if you say I said that, then sure, let me know.
It's sure.
I mean, we've all made mistakes, right? But I doubt I did make a mistake.
We're playing Brentford next. Do we want to leave that for a Friday pod, or do we just want to talk about it right now?
Let's leave it. Like, I don't know how many. Wait, are we playing?
We have no games until
like international.
Yeah, we have no games until like the 30th. So
let's just save it for like, because it wouldn't be this week, then it would be next.
Yeah, it'll be next. Yeah, it'll be next. Yeah, because there's like 12 days between FPL this week for wildcard has just been rubbish. This might be the most useless wildcard I've ever been. No wildcard, like free hits I've ever been a part of in FPL. Everyone just blanked. I think I'm on 15 points.
Yeah. I've gotten out of that pyramid scheme.
The almighty sugar auntie is strong in this.
Francis, are you talking this year?
The pyramid scheme.
Guy, look up. Look up.
Are you talking?
Don't break your neck while you're looking up. Look up. That's where you're going farming, nigga.
I said I'm not going to do now. You don't need to be doing gra-gra for me. Use your bad voice, my guy.
When you look up, you find me.
All this aggression.
Larry has played FPL. He has played FPL 3 years. I don't think he has ever been higher than 19th.
2 years. And I have multiple.
He has played 3 years. 3 years on record. 3 years on record.
My God.
When it comes to if Larry was a manager in FPL,
it called begging me at all hours of the day.
Larry, begging at all hours. Please.
This guy sent me email based on begging for FPL. Now look at you. Here,
Larry is the Tony Pulis of our time. Tony Pulis.
Yo, Tony Pulis is wild, man.
Larry is the Tony Pulis of our time, man. Prime time fraud.
Yo, FPL, man. Yo, FPL is... I don't know, man. Anyways, brings us to the end of the podcast.
You know what it is. This salesman that was begging me not so long ago is a cutting joke. A car salesman. Because I said I won't subscribe, I won't put my money into that the pyramid scheme that I've availed myself of, I thank God. Francis, I know you're not winning anything this year, but it's all good.
Anyways, thank you all for listening. Please give us a follow on socials at What Will Fergie Do on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Also, rate and review us. You can now do that on Spotify. 5 stars only. Anything less than 5 stars.
Keep it to yourself.
You don't know the
vibe. You have one job.